The translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Whenever the principles of religion deteriorate and the principles of irreligion increase, the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, appears by His own will. The purport by Srila Prabhupada. The principles by which an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends upon earth are explained in this verse. The same principles are also explained in Bhagavad Gita 4:7 by the Lord Himself. Yada yada hi dharma shaglanir bhavati bharata. Abhyotanam dharmasya tadatmanam srishamihaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. In the present age, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has appeared as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to inaugurate the Hare Krishna movement. At the present time in Kali Yuga, people are extremely sinful and bad, Munda. They have no idea of spiritual life and are misusing the benefits of the human form to live like cats and dogs. Under these circumstances, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has inaugurated the Hare Krishna movement, which is non-different from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one associates with this movement, he directly associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People should take advantage of the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra and thus gain relief from all the problems created in this age of Kali. Om Agyanati Marandasya Janana Sakalaya Chaptun Militam Jena Tasme Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutare Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Uskatya Desatarane Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Vancha kalpa trubhyascha kripa sindhubhyascha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. The commentary, the purport of this verse is really extraordinary. Because he makes such a powerful statement about the appearance of Mahaprabhu and the purpose with which he incarnated, which is to inaugurate the Hare Krishna movement, and that this movement is non-different from Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. The other day, I was speaking a little bit on the idea, they were discussing like monarchy, and Prabhupada was speaking about how people see things separate from Krishna. They separate Krishna from his energy. And he was commenting how that's not proper. Like some people, they just want to read Bhagavatam, particularly 10th canto Bhagavatam, actually. And they don't want to bother with Bhagavad Gita or perhaps the other cantos of Bhagavatam. But Prabhupada pointed out that actually this is a sign of undeveloped consciousness, undeveloped realization, because everything associated with Krishna, by the association with Krishna, becomes Krishna, as good as Krishna. Like the example he gives of the iron going into the fire. And in that case, he was mentioning, so therefore chanting the names of the warriors, like in Bhagavad Gita, is associating with Krishna. So if we consider that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has inaugurated the Hare Krishna movement, he has appeared, it says, in the present age, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to inaugurate the Hare Krishna movement. That is a loaded statement. And as members of this Hare Krishna movement, disciples, grand disciples, etc., of Srila Prabhupada, that puts a lot of weight on our shoulders. Because that means everything we are doing, or everything we should be doing, is being done on behalf of the Supreme Personality as Godhead. That we are acting as his representative. And we are acting as a representative of Srila Prabhupada, who was the one who stepped forward to bring the Hare Krishna movement, to manifest the Hare Krishna movement. So it is actually not a small thing, our individual and collective responsibilities. But we are understanding from this verse and the verse that was quoted in Bhagavad Gita that the Lord's coming, and he comes by his own will. Sometimes people are calling, "Oh God, please save me, please come." But it's up to the Lord if he comes or not comes. And there are specific causes of his appearance. And he explains here that why he descends. When the principles of religion deteriorate and the principles of irreligion increase, then he appears. And it's explained in the purport of the Bhagavad Gita for this verse 4:7 that his appearance is not connected to creation. It's not like the Lord created himself and then he appeared. He's always existing. In the word tadatmanam shijami aham, so the shijami is indicative of that. There is no creation when it is related to the Lord's appearance. Up here in this verse, shijate, he descends. But it's not that here was a seed that was planted, he manifested, and all of a sudden he was there, always existing. And therefore, he's always present, and when he manifests as he is. It's not like he has to go through some transformation or some morphosis into something else. He comes as he is. And the Dharma, or the principles of religion, are the direct orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the purpose... Is there a burden here? And the purpose... What kind of bird was that? Anyway, the purpose of the Vedas is to establish these principles, the principles of religion, under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And these principles are intended to push the living entities in the human form to complete surrender. And Krishna describes that surrender. What is, how we should do it? We surrender by giving up all of these other dharmas. So these other dharmas were not referring specifically to this religion or that religion. It's all these activities that are disconnecting us from Krishna. Give them up and surrender unto me. Put yourself under my care. And when these principles are disturbed, the principles of dharma that are leading one, pushing one towards the Lord, when they're disturbed, then he appears. And he can advent anywhere. Prabhupada said in the purport, as his son, just like Lord Christ appeared. You know, there's many times there's some parallels in the appearances of the Lord or his incarnation. So just like Krishna appeared in a prison, so that was an unusual place to appear. One might say it's not a very auspicious place, you know, to appear in a prison. But whenever or wherever the Lord appears, that place becomes all auspicious, very sacred. And then Jesus Christ, he appeared in a, you know, in a barn. It's in the manger. A manger is a place where the cows or the donkeys are kept. You know, so that similarity is there. Both came from, apparently, of course, Krishna's background kind of changed because there was a transference from the prison to Gokul, but in that then, he was coming from the family of cowherds, you know. And so when he comes, he tries to give transcendental knowledge. But he does this in such a way, the Lord or his representatives do it in such a way that they speak as much as can be understood by the persons whom they are addressing, and the particular persons, and under their circumstances. But either way, the mission remains the same. You know, to lead one to God consciousness, to lead one to obedience of God, to lead one to surrendering to God and towards the religious principles. So he will come personally. He'll send his bona fide representative, his son, his servant, or sometimes he comes himself but disguised. So we can say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in that category. He's come disguised as a devotee, and only some persons could actually understand who he really was. And the reason he was in this disguise was because if you come as the Lord directly, then everyone is going to be in this mood of awe and venerance. But he wanted to teach the persons how to be devotees by his own actions, his own activities, his own instructions. So in this way, he, coming as a devotee, he was able to show them how one should behave. Then Prabhupada says that the Gita was spoken to Arjuna because Arjuna was highly enlightened. He was an enlightened personality. He could understand these things. And advanced, elevated, compared to others. So this is, you know, sometimes again people wonder, like, you know, there are classes of devotees who consider the Gita to be not, you know, not so important after all. It's just like a primary book, they're thinking. And on one level that may be. On the other level, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna because he was an elevated person. So, and also, he gives the example there, you know, it's 2 + 2 = 4 in beginning math and in higher math. Principle is the same. So, if we don't have a complete absorption and understanding in the so-called lower math, we are not going to be able to absorb and understand. I realized the higher math. So I was thinking about this verse, the principles by which an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead descend into the earth. So we understand that, you know, when he comes, he has some mission, he has some idea, he wants to spread his mercy, you know, deliver people, wants to reestablish your principles of religion and, you know, put down the corroding elements. So many, many aspects of the Lord therefore came in this way, like Matsya Avatar. So Matsya Avatar showed special mercy to Satyavrata Muni and the whole world after an impartial, it was a partial inundation, and Matsya helped keep this boat afloat. And under the surface, what had happened, Lord Brahma, he'd lost the Vedas, they had like sunk to the bottom of the ocean, and there was a Hayagriva, not the incarnation of Godhead Hayagriva, but the demon Hayagriva, and he had got the Vedas. So Satyavrata was a pious king. He was like piously doing his pujas on the bank of a river whose name I forgot, but he's doing this puja river. And he put his water pot in, and he came up. There was a little fish in his water pot. So, feeling compassion on this little fish, he didn't want to harm him. He put him back in the stream. And to his astonishment, this little fish told him that, "Help, don't put me back in here because I'll get eaten by the other larger creatures." And so he brought him, put him in his pot, back in the pot. He brought him home, and he had a larger container there, and he put the little fish in this larger container. And the next morning, the little fish was no longer so little. He was like maxing out the larger container and, you know, grasping for air because, you know, they need a lot of water. And so he took them and got a bigger container. Same thing happened. Bigger container, same thing happened. He was just like getting a little bewildered. Then he takes him to a stream and to a lake, you know, he takes him to this lake. And finally he understood, and then the fish says, "Don't put me in here, I'll get consumed." And he started to understand that this was not an ordinary fish. You know, took a few efforts, he understood. And he actually understood that the fish was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that he was coming for the welfare of the whole world. But, you know, why a fish? You couldn't, like, kind of, why would he come as a fish? And he came to know that in 7 days there was going to be a gigantic flood, a big inundation, and then a large boat would come. So he was somehow told, I don't remember the details how he was told, but he had to collect herbs and plants, seeds, trees, all kinds of animals, put them in this boat. You know. And then seven rishis, the seven, you know, like the seven famous rishis, all of them were going to go in the boat. And I was thinking about that, and it reminded me, obviously, it was like, oh, Noah's Ark, you know. And then I thought, let me check on Noah's Ark to see, you know, something. And I came across a very interesting, it was kind of a very interesting take on the Ark. It was called the, what if Noah built the, you know, got, was to build the Ark in the present day. And I don't know, you know, I gave this scenario, I'll relate it, but, you know, it's actually interesting because we are, even in our own day, sometimes trying to, you know, from the time Krishna consciousness came in the 60s and now in our, you know, the 2000s, and, you know, we are facing different scenarios and considering, do we have to make some kind of adjustments in our preaching, you know, how things will manifest. So I guess that person was thinking like this. So he gave this scenario that Noah... Noah's out there, and God came and goes, "Noah, in 1 year it's going to rain. I'm going to rain and I'll inundate the whole world in a huge flood until everything's destroyed. So I want you to save the righteous people and two of all species. And I want you, I command you to build an ark. So then there was this flash of lightning, and God delivered specifications, how to build the ark, you know, how it would be like. I was thinking, yeah, flashes of lightning, sometimes they occur in spiritual situations, just like when Srila Prabhupada told Shyamasundara to ask George Harrison to get, you know, for the money for the Krishna book. It was kind of an intense moment, and there was some lightning and thunder, and all the lights went out. Darkness all around. And then they went back on again, and Shyamasundara had been in such anxiety, and he kind of looks up at George, and George just says, well, you can't argue with that, you know. He offered the money. So anyway, this the lightning came, the specifications were delivered, and Noah was like kind of trembling and fearful, and he said, yes, I'll do it, I'll do this. And then the Lord said, remember, 1 year is all you have. So exactly a year later, there was fierce clouds were forming and the oceans were churning. And God came down and he saw Noah sitting in his front yard and he was like weeping. And he asked, where's the ark? You know, like everything was showing very, he said, oh, please forgive me, Lord. And he tells what happened. He goes, you know, I tried to do this. I tried my best, but there were so many problems and complications. When I started to build it, some people came, government people, and they go, you need a construction permit. And then they looked at the plan that he'd gotten from the Lord, and they go, your plan's not up to code. So then I had to hire an engineering firm to redraw the plans. And then OSHA came, and they were saying, you have to have a sprinkling system, and you have to have flotation devices. And there was a big problem getting the wood because there was a ban on cutting trees because you would disturb the spotted owl. So then I had to convince the forestry that we need the wood to save the owl. But then the wildlife department wouldn't let me catch any owls. You know, and then the carpenters formed a union and they went on strike and I had to negotiate with the National Labor Union. So now I have 16 carpenters, but I don't have any owls. And then I began rounding up all the animals, and I got sued by PETA. You all know what PETA is? Animal Rights Organization. So then I had to go to court with them, and finally the court dismissed it. But then the Environmental Protection Agency notified me that I couldn't complete the project without filing an environmental impact on the proposed flood. So they didn't take kindly to the idea that they had no jurisdiction over the Creator. So then the Army Corps of Engineers demanded a universal map of the proposed flood plan. So I sent them a globe, you know, like a globe of the universe. And then I got the Equal Opportunity Commission and started charging me with discrimination because I was not taking any godless believers because, you know, he told them you have to take the righteous people. So he was charged with discrimination for not taking the godless believers on board. And the tax people came and they seized all my assets, claiming that I was building the ark in order to flee the country to avoid paying taxes. So then he said, I got a notice from the state that I owe a user's tax fee for failing to register the ark as a recreational water vehicle. And he said, then finally, the ACLU, so this is the American Civil Liberties Union, they make sure everybody is treated fairly, got into court with an injunction against further construction, saying that since the flood is caused by God, God is flooding the earth, it's a religious event. And therefore, it's unconstitutional. So you can't continue building the ark. So then he says, I think it was going to take me another 5 or 6 years to get finish all this. And as soon as he said that, the sky began to clear, the ocean stopped turning, a rainbow came out, and Noah got a little hopeful, and he goes, God, does this mean you're not going to destroy the earth? And God replied, no, sadly enough, the governments have already done that. So that was like the in modern day scenario, trying to do something for God. And, you know, sometimes we have these same, you know, impediments, the kind of impediments, like we're trying to have a Rath Yatra. They won't give the permit. Like here in London one time, they wouldn't give the permit. And Prabhupada said, then just take the cart and park it. You know, it's just like, okay, we won't have a parade. But take the cart and park the cart. And then people that will drive by, they'll see Lord Jagannath, you know. You know, so these things are going on. Enjoy. So. So anyway, there was Satyavrata in the boat with all the animal species and the plants, trees, and creepers and the seven sages. That was good, yes. But he prayed to the Lord because things got really rough. And he said, please, my dear Lord, please, please cut the knots of ignorance in my heart. That was his prayer. And the Lord gave him spiritual knowledge, and then he killed Hayagriva, rescued the Vedas, and returned them to Lord Brahma. So then the next appearance of the Lord was Kurma. Kurma was a tortoise. And what happened there was like Durvasa Muni. He'd cursed the demigods. He cursed the demigods to lose their power. And he was such a powerful person that they became very weak. And obviously they started feeling some anxiety. But the Supreme Lord told them, don't worry. You know, don't fight with them. Because now they have the power. If you fight with them, you'll lose. So don't fight with them. Make friends with them. So it was very good strategic advice, you know. Actually, there was a ruler of in South Africa. His name was Nelson Mandela. And he came into power after really incredible austerities, including 25 years in jail. He was a person of the people. So he was trying to, you know, serve all people, and the government there was apartheid at the time, which meant segregationist, and he was put into prison, and he actually endured hard labor in prison. They would make them carve these big bricks out of big stones, and then they would just, right in front of them, after they'd labored so hard, smash them up, you know, trying to break their will, the prisoner's will. But Nelson Mandela was a very powerful person, and it's said that he said that during his time in the prison, he read Bhagavad Gita, and that became a source of his strength. So anyway, the good advice from the Supreme Lord, you know. Oh, so then, why I was mentioning this, so Lord told the demigods, just make friends with the demons, you know. So Nelson Mandela, after he came into power, there was still a lot of enemies out there. So what did he do? That, you know, like some of these other countries nowadays, he didn't send out the goon squad to kill the enemies. He actually invited them to sit on his cabinet, because that way he knew where they were. They were right around him. And so that was, you know, a very intelligent thing to do on his part. So then, you know, he told these make friends with the demons, and you know, don't worry, I'll always be with you. And then Mandana Mountain was there, and the plan was to churn this mountain and produce this immortal nectar. And it would churn the mountain, the demons on one side, the demigods on the other, by using these ropes of Vasuki. It was a snake, so use him for the rope. So the demons took the tail end and the devotees took the head end, but then the demons got like, oh, why did they take, maybe we should have that end, so then they switched. And the Lord said that what's going to happen is that some poison is going to appear. Don't worry about it. Poison will appear. And while they were starting to churn, Mandara, the mountain, fell down to the bottom of the ocean floor, sank. So then, principles of religion, you know, the demons are taking over. Kurma came, and he went under the mountain, and he raised the mountain. And then they started in this churning again. And when they would churn, the mountain, which was now on the back of Kurma, it would scratch his back. So that felt very good. So he was very pleased by that action. And as the Lord had said, this great amount of poison was produced. So the demons became really frightened. The devotees, they weren't so disturbed because they had been told, don't worry, I'll be there with you. But the demons, they didn't, you know, have anyone to turn to, so they turned to Lord Shiva, you know, do something, this is going to kill us all. So on their behalf, he swallowed this ocean, you know, holding it in his throat, which caused his neck to become bluish. But in doing that, it said like a few drops fell out and fell on the earth. And those little drops, what fell on the earth, were consumed by some various creatures. So the result is that was that now snakes and scorpions and poisonous plants are said to be a result of this poisonous nectar that fell. You know, but the devotees weren't affected. So then the next wonderful appearance of the Lord, half man, half lion, Lord Nrisingadev, Bhagavan Kijai. And of course we could spend like days and weeks discussing his wonderful incarnation and how he appeared from a pillar to save his devotee Prahlad. And then after that, Lord Vamana appeared. And he was he appeared in the womb of Aditi by Kashyapa. And when he appeared, he was like fully equipped with a conch shell disc, club, and lotus. And at that point, his hue was blackish, and he was dressed in yellowish garments. And there was a very auspicious time. The Vishya just saw star had just risen. The whole world was really happy. So there was going to be a grand celebration on his appearance. And he appeared in the sacrificial ring of Bali Maharaj, who is the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. So when he appeared there, he was so beautiful. You know, the description of him, he was like wearing this like deer skin. He had this little rod. He had his kamandalu, the water pot. And, you know, so such an enchanting. And he was a dwarf. He came as a very small person. So Bali Maharaj, others were greeting him very nicely. And, you know, one by one, people were giving him wonderful gifts. His mother gave him gifts. Other sages gave him gifts. And then Bali Maharaj, you know, he worshipped him. He washed his feet. He took the bath water, that fit bath water. He put it on his head. You know, what can I offer you? Just whatever you like, you know. He said, I want three steps. And Bali Maharaj kind of laughed at that because you're just a little boy. You don't know I could give you the whole world. I could give you so much. And you're asking for three steps of land. You're just so small. How many, you know, you're not going to get very much. And but no, that's all right. It's what I want. And then Sukracharya, who's like the kind of controversial guru of the demigods, he's had some interesting situations. That's why I say controversial. So anyway, he tried to stop him. No, don't let him do this. And Bali, even though he was born in a family of demons, he was actually like a pious demon. You know, sounds like an oxymoron, but he was a pious demon. So he broke the order of his guru, which normally would be really abominable to break the order of your guru. But in this circumstance, it was actually mercy for the guru that he didn't follow the order of the guru and that he went ahead. So then, of course, we have this little dwarf suddenly expanding himself, getting really big and bigger and bigger. At first, he covered the entire surface of the world and the sky, all directions by his hands and the upper planetary systems and the second step. And then there was no place to go. And the demons, you know, Bali's court, all his people were really angry, started to fight. But the devotees of Vishnu, the servants of Vishnu, they were easily able to defeat him. And Bali was just there, even he was like in this mood, and Garuda came and he tied him up with the ropes of Varuna. So now he was like truly helpless. He had nothing, you know. And in this wonderful situation, the Lord asked him now for the third step, you know, knowing there was no other place, you know, to put his foot. And Bali bowed his head. So this, of course, was very pleasing to the Lord, this total surrender, very pleasing to the Lord. And he promised that he would always remain with him. He wouldn't leave him. So we can learn that the highest gain, you know, everybody wants to gain something in life. The whole world is out there, like, when you go to the airport, there's just like so much chaos and confusion. Everybody's just going around, all to gain something. Yesterday, I almost didn't get here because the pilots went on strike because they're trying to get more, you know, they wanted to gain more money. And I was on this airline called Lufthansa, and they stopped all the flights. There was like 3,000 canceled flights, including mine. And I didn't even find out till like really late in the evening, and I had no phone to call anybody, and the internet was going off, and I was like wondering what I was going to do, or I was, well, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. Krishna's probably going to have to do something. He has a plan here. I was able to get a hold of Varshana Devi, and she got a hold of the travel agency who issued the ticket, and they said, we've been trying to contact all day, you know, like they actually wanted to give me a seat on another flight, but there was no way to contact me. The last minute, everything came together. I was thinking, oh, you know, if I don't make it, I already sent out a note. Let them know I won't make it, because there was a nice program last night with the ladies. I won't be there. I won't be able to come to give the class. But then got on the plane, and you're flying, and you're just seeing these cities, and so much is going on. And everybody's trying to get something. So there's no one who's not trying to get something, including the devotees. But we have to be clear about what we're trying to get. Otherwise, we'll also get bewildered like everyone else. So the highest gain in life, this is to get transcendental knowledge, to get devotional service and full surrender. So that was emblematic of the appearance of Vamanadev and the way he made that wonderful scenario for Bali Maharaj to surrender to him. Then there was Parashuram, who was like, he was like a mix between Kshatriya and Brahmin. And he got really upset seeing how the Brahmanas were misusing their position, their ranks and power, and he came with an axe, and 21 times he was going all over the world slaying the false Kshatriyas. Then, of course, Lord Ramchandra, who is the emblem of the righteous king, the righteous monarch, and then Balaram, then Krishna, and Lord Buddha came to, he came in this way that looked like he was not part of the normal lineup, because he actually put aside the Vedas, because what was happening, ignorant people were using the Vedas in a way that was misusing the Vedas for animal slaughter. You can find whatever you want in the Vedas, but taking the highest principle or the lowest principle. So animal slaughter is not wholesale allowed. There were stipulations, and the main point was it was intended to bring you out of that and bring you, you know, into a higher level, not that you can enjoy animal slaughter. And he saw that wasn't happening, so then he just came in and he established this, you know, he stopped the sacrifices and he promoted the ahimsa. Now ahimsa is a very favorite word in ISKCON. We have our ahimsa this, our ahimsa that, you know, our ahimsa silk, our ahimsa milk. And of course, naturally, we are in favor of nonviolence. And then the final appearance, of course, Kalki. So we're waiting on that one. We're waiting on his appearance, and hopefully we'll not be here when it happens. Hopefully we'll be, if we're not back home, back to Godhead, we'll be assisting the Lord on another planet, because all these things are going on simultaneously, one after the other, in different, we have our Earth, but there's other planets out there, and the scientists are trying their hardest to find them, but they're never going to find them because they just don't have the inner equipment that will allow them to see them. But he will destroy all the unrighteousness and the evil influence of Kali. So that, therefore, whenever the principles of religion deteriorate and the principles of irreligion increase, the supreme controller, the personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, appears by his own will. And in this age, Lord Chaitanya, by Prabhupada's words, has appeared to inaugurate the Hare Krishna movement. So that has given us a very, very clear instruction. And we should take it really carefully in our hearts, how we conduct ourselves and how we assist Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada in spreading the Hare Krishna movement. Because there's no doubt that you just need to take a glance at the news to know how bad things are. We don't need to detail it. And it's not going to get any better. But there will be that opportunity of a 10,000-year reprieve, and we can help that manifest, you know. We're the kind of like the little fire that is waiting to become a big fire if we all pitch in. So, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Thank you. So, are there any points, questions, or corrections? No. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.